B-Pod Studios.
.985 to Sports Hub. We're Toucher and Rich. Houghton Felger, Mads. .985 to Sports Hub's Christmas in the City. Christmas in the City gives Christmas gifts to thousands of Boston children that are currently homeless. Felger and Mads are out this week collecting toys and money. In fact, tomorrow, they'll be at the Newbury Comics at the Natick Mall doing a meet and greet from 1 to 3. Bid on great items now. At the auction at 985thesportshub.com. You have until 6 p.m. tonight to do that. You can help Felger and Mads and Christmas in the City make a difference for thousands of children this holiday season.
It has never been a better time, Fred, to be a fired NFL coach that has some sort of integrity. Like, if you're Ron Rivera right now and you're looking at all of these teams that are going to need coaches, there's probably going to be at least six different positions that are open, and some of them prime gigs, like the Dallas Cowboys.
All right.
Even the whole situation with the Browns,
I got to read this, though.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you were done.
Burt Breer is the senior NFL reporter and lead content strategist for the MMQB. He's brought to you by this morning by New England Fat Loss. Looking to lose weight? Ask your doctor if they would recommend a plan with prepackaged foods and shakes for a real meal program. Eating healthy food with New England Fat Loss.
So with the Dallas Cowboys, you've got a situation right now, which remarkably, even after the loss last night at 6-7, they're still atop the NFC East.
Right. I mean, it's crazy. And you think about, and that's why, like, if you listen to Jerry last night, he kept saying over and over again, I don't care about the standings. I don't care about the standings. I don't care about the standings.
Yeah, he does.
But he doesn't because, Stephen Jones said to me in August, this is the best, deepest roster we've had since the 90s.
They're playing like it.
And I don't know if I disagree with it.
They lost
it's a good roster.
Yeah, sure.
It's a really good roster. And, I mean, look, like the Cowboys, like, for all their faults, and you live down there, Jerry, like, gets crushed for being the GM, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, over the last 10 years.
It's a good team.
I mean, I don't know too many GMs that put together better teams than Jerry Jones has. So, I understand why he's frustrated. You look at the talent they've had go through there. I mean, the Romo teams, like Tony Romo, Jason Witten, DeMarcus Ware, Brady James, Greg Ellis. Like, those were Terrell Owens, Marion Barber. Like, those were good teams. And now he's got another one. And I'm sure there's part of this for him where he's looking at it and say, I thought we were on the verge of, like, we've got our quarterback on a rookie contract. We got to take care of Amari Cooper, but he's in the roster. Ezekiel Elliott's here. The defense is in order. Like, they thought they were going to be in the same position that Seattle, San Francisco,
sure,
the Patriots, Baltimore's in. So, like, if you're him, it's exactly what you're saying. It's like, I don't care about the standings. I didn't think we were going to be 6-7. And what matters is how we're playing.
Well, I'm always envious of these guys down in Dallas, this radio show, RJ and Sean, because every week they have on Jerry Jones. I mean,
that's RJ Choppy.
So every week they have him on. And Jerry Jones is just, I mean, he's a great interview. And he said something they asked about. This is after last week's loss. Yeah. They asked about Jason Garrett's job security. And listen to how Jerry Jones answers this question.
I look at coaching, and this stuff is the head coach. I look at all coaches. I think about there's no exclusive. Nobody's got the exclusive skills to get the job done so that collectively you can win a Super Bowl. But they're qualified people. Jason Garrett is one of them. In my opinion, Jason Garrett will be coaching in the NFL next year.
He'll be coaching in the NFL next year.
And I think that's a swipe.
Oh, sure it is.
Oh, yeah. No. I think that's a swipe at the news that came out about Jason Garrett and the Giants. I think, let's just call this an educated opinion.
Mm-hmm.
I think it pissed Jerry off that when they weren't playing well on the morning of the Patriot game, that the news came out that the New York Giants would be interested in Jason Garrett. I think Jerry was suspicious that was coming from Garrett's camp.
Mm.
And I think Jerry was like, what the hell? And if you notice, after that happened, it was Ian on NFL Network, which Ian's doing his job, nothing against him at all. When you notice, like, where the criticism of Jason Garrett from Jerry Jones took a sharp turn and got a lot more pointed, it was right after that happened.
Yeah.
And I think Jerry's looking at this and saying to himself, again, I think this is another one of those what the hell moments. Like, we're struggling here. like we've got what we think is our best roster maybe since like the triplet days.
On top of that, Jerry Jones has been to a fault protective of Jason Garrett.
Right.
How many teams have you been fired of by now?
And now I got to deal with you sniffing around another job in my division?
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not trying to defend Jerry here, but I'm like a couple of these things are sort like, and I know it's kind of it's funny because of glory hole and all that different stuff, right? Like, but I mean, you look at like a couple of like why he's mad. Like, it's logical, right? Like, mm-hmm. If you think you had that good a team, like you don't care about the standings. You're 6-7, and B, if you you think you're in that spot and you're struggling. And you've got this head coach that you have like basically built into this over 25 years, and now he's sniffing around your rival's, potential opening.
But if you're Garrett, do you do that? Do you kind of?
And I don't think Jason has anything to do with it.
Okay, because I was going to say because that narrative, maybe you're like, well, if you fire me, I'm going to go inside.
I don't think Jason's doing it, but put it this way, I think that there are people. I think that there are people that have worked with Jason, and I think there are people that work for Jason that have, because I've heard it, that have sort of like gotten it out there that like, hey, the Giants would consider him, and I think there's truth in that too.
I want Mason Glory Hole.
There's truth in the Giants. Yeah, there you go. It's the best example I could think of. Like, why do we look at Jerry?
It's the best.
As a young man, I used to travel around, go to the Flying J's, and. Oh, look at that. I don't know what's behind that wall, but it sure does feel good.
His stories. His dad was like the considered like had a grocery store in Arkansas, right?
Uh-huh.
Was considered like the P.T. Barnum of grocery store owners.
Well,
like,
who wouldn't be?
That's how he became. Like, that's how Jerry. That's like the whole story of how Jerry became the ultimate salesman. His dad was the P.T. Barnum.
I used to put myself in the produce. Whoops-a-daisy. It looks like you found yourself a cucumber.
I think that's a part of leadership is to have some of the guys that have gone before that have been disappointed to share it with everybody involved. For me, it's a reminder. I, too, have been here 23 years. And it is a reminder. I've been here when it was glory hole days, and I've been here when it wasn't. And so having said that, I want me some glory hole. So I have that perspective.
I mean, that just the way that
I want me some glory hole.
The way that the
it's not just glory hole; it's the presentation. I want me some glory hole.
I don't want to know what's on the other side. I want to be. I want to leave guilt free.
That's right.
So apparently, that's an oil term, right?
Yes, I guess.
But is that a real like? Because that was the excuse I heard right away. I never really looked.
Or did
into
somebody
it.
Like dig that up from some really obscure
PR guy? Like, oh my god, we gotta clean this up.
No, that's got to be an oil thing. That it's got to be when you hit oil.
So this was great because Jason Garrett last night was asked about his job security.
Your job security has become a massive focal point for this franchise nationally, locally. Do you think that's a distraction for these players right now?
Yeah, I can't speak to that. The most important thing we have to do is learn from this game and get back to work. And we'll be off this weekend because of the Thursday game, and we'll get back to work on Monday, get ready for the next challenge.
And Jerry Jones, once again, just said, I love how Jerry Jones answers questions. Like, he does a press conference for 10, 15 minutes after every game. What other owner does that? Here's Jerry Jones.
Chicago took it to us. We won't be going anywhere until we win a football game. We did all of the things that you can do that cause you to lose football games in the game. Until we can win a football game, I don't care what kind of contention we're in, we've got to start playing and winning a football game so that we can be able to play better than we play tonight.
I mean, he's speaking like he's talking to like a five-year-old.
Well, you talk about how he's been a pretty good GM over the last 10 years. Well, his inability to fire Jason Garrett is probably the one Achilles heel.
All right. I've explained that part to you guys, right? Like, it's because Jason Garrett is literally, like, he views Jason Garrett as a creation of
his. I know, okay. But that, and by the way, you've lost everyone when Kendrick Perkins tweets, until we get a new coach, I'm officially done with the Cowboys, and I mean that S.
All right, well, it's good to know that Kendrick Perkins.
Just in case you.
All right, when we come back, I want to know a couple things. First of all, I want to know all the coaches are going to get fired. And right. Second of all, at some point, we can talk about all this Brady stuff and what you're hearing around
the receivers that are all seem to be reaching out and saying, hey.
I won't bore you with the Dez Bryant stuff, but we can be right back.
The game. I want Mason Doyle.
Half of it. Rich. 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Bang, bang.
I gotta beat this damn lot. It's only 10:50. The open doors at 11, but y'all in a rush. I got the money to swing it. It's all Ken Griffey. But so does this bum in front of me, smelling like a lush. And there's a woman in front of him who forgot to brush. She's in pajama pants, sipping on an orange crush. The door's open, let's get it going, let's speed it up. They're looking up at the menu like they ain't seen it once. I like the carnitas and possibly the barbacoa. Actually, I'll have the chicken, sir, because my heart is slower.
98.5, the Sports Hub. We're Toucher and Rich, and this is... Now, this is Esoteric, not Czarface. Or is it Czarface?
No, it's Czarface. He put the new record, The Odds Czar Against Us, S-Z-A-R. It's out today, as a matter of fact. And he told me that it's definitely better than Deion Sanders' record.
Well, that's... I mean, sometimes these MCs get a little too high on themselves. I mean, if it's better than Deion Sanders' record. But they always...
Like, what was his Must Be the Money? No, Must Be the Money?
It was Must Be the Money.
Right, yeah.
But Esoteric, obviously, at Newbury Comics and through his website, you can get vinyl, which is always very well done.
I mean, that song's good, but it's the one where he goes
scooping up the women with the biggest butts.
Scooping up the ladies. I just like he just butts. Is such a pimp.
I have to believe that John Wallach owned that album.
Oh, there's no question.
He had to own that album.
Or did he? But
it was a lovely combination of bad hip hop and sports rolled into one.
Which is
did he own
John
King,
Wallach?
Did he own
the
King
album? The album cover is fantastic.
Oh, it's the most '90s thing ever.
It's an actual clock like that he's on. Right?
Did he own the Ken Griffey Jr. record album? Ken Griffey Jr. had a rap.
Oh yeah. There's no doubt. If any athlete put out music, John Wallach bought it.
I don't think
he had Griffey
this.
Right here.
That's Griffey?
Yep.
Really?
Yep.
Well, he had just
better than Deion. I mean, the one that the highest profile one was definitely Shaq, right?
Well, Shaq's was legitimately good.
Shaq Fu?
Yeah, for an athlete.
Because it was Fu Schnickens.
He was, yeah, it was Can We Rock? What's Up, Doc? You know.
Where do they think of these kinds of samples? So unique from that time period. All right, Bert, before we get to the Patriots stuff, I do want to ask you, who is going to be fired? We've talked about, Rich, you know, talked about if you're Ron Rivera, you're sure. Obviously going to get a job. You still have Mike McCarthy out there.
I don't know, man. Like, everybody, like, and I think Ron did a great job in Carolina. But I think a lot of people would have said, myself included, would have said Mike McCarthy's probably going to get a job last year. And I think we make this assumption sometimes with coaches.
But McCarthy, there was stuff about him not trying.
Everyone, and also, I don't think
everyone
he was
likes
liked.
Rivera.
Everyone loves Rivera.
Yeah, like, and when Cam Newton has said very nice things about him as he was leaving. All right, so who?
So we have the two. We have the two that are open now. Washington and Carolina. I can tell you, like, Washington's already pretty aggressively reached out to some guys in the college level. And, you know, you're going to hear names like Matt Rhule at Baylor, Lincoln Riley at Oklahoma with a lot of these. Washington's certainly been in the mix on those. I'd say Carolina, like, watch Josh McDaniels there. Like, that's one I think for this year. I mentioned last year, I think Green Bay and Cleveland were on his radar last year. I think Carolina's going to be on his radar this year. There's a connection there, too, with ownership. Robert Kraft was a champion for David Tepper during the bidding process.
Mm-hmm.
And so there is a little bit of a relationship there where I think Josh would probably feel comfortable going there.
I wouldn't hire him. I'd take the kid, the guy from Baylor, the guy from Oklahoma, Ron Rivera, Mike McCarthy. I would not take Josh.
So we got those two. We got those two open right now. I would say the Giants, there's a likelihood that opens. Yep. I don't think the GM gets fired, but I think Pat Shurmur probably does unless things get better over the next month. Jacksonville, I think, potentially could be a clean sweep. I think Coughlin's gone. I think the other two guys, Caldwell and Marone, are absolutely fighting for their jobs. Atlanta could be a clean sweep. The Lions, I think, are worth watching. I think there's a chance that Patricia and Quinn get another year.
Mm-hmm.
Just because, and you know this being from there, no one really knows what the old lady's going to do.
But, like, she's not as bad as the old man.
Well, he was super patient. And
right.
So, like, there's, like, the Lions have had this like reputation for being very patient with their coaches. This goes back to Wayne Fonts. And like the question is the old lady going to be the same way?
Well, the reason that the Ford, the guy who's passed away, was they said that because he was an recovering alcoholic, that he tended to give people like a much longer
second
rope. Yeah, second chances.
Right, right. So I think Detroit is in the mix. The issue is like if you're going to get rid of your coach, and I think there is some feeling about Matt Patricia there, who I think was actually starting to turn a corner early in the year before they lost a couple close games. If you get rid of the coach, you have to get rid of the GM, because you can't. Can you let the GM? Can you let Bob Quinn hire another coach? So that's a question. Dallas is, you know, obvious. I think unless you know they catch fire the last three games, and then probably I think he probably has to win a playoff game.
Which, by the way,
to survive.
Jane Slater, who I think you worked with at the NFL Network, she tweeted last night that apparently she's I can confirm a very real interest in Urban Meyer.
Yeah, and I can tell you that. I can tell you I heard that back in February and March that he had some level of interest in that job. Like
is he really sick?
Yeah. He is.
Okay, because he keeps coming back. If he comes back and he keeps like that's bad for him.
It is. It is. And I think that's why if you hire him, he's a short-termer. He's not coming back unless he's in a situation where he thinks he can win. And I don't think he's going to either. He's going to anywhere but a college blue blood or like a brand name NFL team, right? Okay. Like I think it would have to be something like that. That said, he does have a relationship with the Jones family. And he like there's a question about whether NFL players would respond to him.
Yeah.
But he's very close with the craziest guy in that team.
That's a good point.
So that's part of it too, you know. So I think that there's real interest there. I would say Lincoln Riley's probably above Urban on their list.
Okay.
And then I think the Chargers are one worth watching just because the business side of that operation is such a disaster right now.
Yeah.
And can you go into that stadium where you've struggled? And I told you guys the numbers, and I think my buddy Seth did a really good story on the whole landscape in LA. You should check it out if you're interested. But I think that their goal was at like $400 million on the PSLs, and they've only sold I think $60 million, something like that.
Wow.
$65 million. So the business side there, I mean, as bad as it looks in that little soccer stadium, right? And it does look bad. At least they're selling it out. Imagine what that's going to look like in a 70,000 seat.
You know who gets you to $400 million? Tom Brady.
Yeah. So I think that there's a possibility, and I think Anthony Lynn's done a pretty good job on balance. Like these 3 years, the question is, do they have to do something to generate? Because they are, I'm telling you, they are less than irrelevant in LA.
Yeah.
Right? So the other one I would look at, Cleveland.
No question.
We'll see what happens. I just think it's like, it depends on how it looks over the last month. It depends on how the quarterback looks over the last month. Losing to Pittsburgh doesn't help. Like losing to a Pittsburgh team with Duck Hodges at quarterback does not help. I don't think the owner wants to pay another fired coach as part of this, too. I mean, they are the list of, and you count assistants, the list of like coaches they are paying that aren't working for them right now is pretty long. I mentioned Jacksonville, the Giants.
Jeez, there's a lot of teams.
Yeah, so I think it's going to be seven, probably six, seven, eight, somewhere in there.
Okay, and so right now you're saying that Josh McDaniels is still somebody after all of this that teams are going to be going
well,
after.
I mean, I think it's so.
Would he leave?
I think for the right opportunity, he would.
Well, I think a lot of it depends on Brady, and I have a weird feeling that, you know, if I had to put money on it, I would say that this is probably Brady's last season here, whether he retires or he goes somewhere else. It just doesn't seem like he's happy anymore. It doesn't seem like he didn't take the money that they offered him in this offseason. What makes you think that they're going to give him the money that he wants when the season is done? And you know what? All the stuff I've been saying, Tommy Curran actually wrote a very good article the other day that just encapsulates all the stuff that we've been seeing in front of us. There's almost no reason to think that he is going to continue his time here. So if he does happen to go somewhere else, which I do think is a lesser reason or a lesser possibility than him retiring, I think that it might be a package deal and that you might also have to hire Josh McDaniels.
Then I don't want Tom Brady.
That makes sense on some level to me, just because I think if you're Tom Brady, it's very difficult to go somewhere else when you've been in one system your entire career. You've done things one way your entire career. At 43 years old, because that's how old he'll be on opening day next year, are you willing to hit the reset button? Like, are you willing to just start all over? New facility, new strength staff, new coaching staff, new system, new ownership, new division. Like, you've been in this comfort zone forever. Like, are you willing to go and blow everything up and start it over again, essentially, as a 43-year-old football player? I think if you were going to do that, a lot of crap would have to be right.
Well,
like a lot of stuff around.
Well, how about this?
It would have to be a great team. It would have to be ready to win right now. It would have to be like the right kind of like place.
How about Josh McDaniels and Tom Brady go to the Chargers and they sign Antonio Brown? Don't tell me that can't happen. I mean,
it's not really a need for them, but like.
But I mean.
I mean, because they have Mike Williams and Keenan Allen.
I understand.
But.
But, I mean, he loves Antonio Brown.
I think he loves Antonio Brown on this team.
I think Antonio Brown, like, honestly, like, I think we've all had this in the back of our heads. Like, correct me if I'm wrong here. Antonio Brown is a sort of a vehicle for saying F you for not getting me better play.
Yes. Well,
sure. Yeah, I think that's what Antonio Brown is.
I do agree with that.
All right. By the way, if you said, oh, you get 2 years of Tom Brady at 43 and 44 and you got to take that albatross Josh McDaniels with him, I'm telling you.
Wow, you hate him.
If I am the Chargers, though, and you got to make that money,
I don't think he's a splash.
What a massive splash.
I mean, like, it was a failure in Denver, and I don't think, and we're learning that these assistant coaches.
Yeah, but look at some of the guys out there. Would you rather have Josh McDaniels or Freddie Kitchens?
Well, I wouldn't want Freddie Kitchens to clean my house.
Okay, but I'm just saying that there are a lot of crap coaches out there, and I think he's better than a lot of them.
I don't know about that.
Here's what I would say about this. Like, I think everybody's been fishing off the same pier for the last 5 years. Like, everybody's been trying to get the offensive genius, right? And that's why I think we've seen some of these teams fall flat on their face with the hires. So teams are going to think more outside the box now. I think that's why you're going to see teams go to the college level with guys like Lincoln Riley and Matt Rhule. And that's why we're going to see some defensive coaches, Chris Richard in Dallas.
Sure.
Matt Eberflus in Indianapolis, Robert Saleh in San Francisco, Dennis Allen in New Orleans. That'll be in the mix. Like, teams are going to have to start thinking more creatively. And Josh McDaniels is one name where he was you're not manufacturing like, okay, well, he was the quarterback coach here and here. Like, you're not manufacturing anything. He's been a part of one of the best offenses in the NFL for a long, long time. He can develop quarterbacks. We've seen that not only with Brady, Castle, Garoppolo.
Yeah.
Like, he developed those guys, right? Yeah. Like, he was
Jacoby's finding a little bit of success,
yeah,
too.
I mean, like he's had a hand in developing a lot of quarterbacks. Look, I have a pretty good understanding of why things blew up in Indianapolis. It wasn't all Josh's fault. And I think Chris Ballard, the GM there, would tell you now that everyone, in fact, he has told me, that the final result was probably what was best for everyone because those two guys had a different idea on how to run a team.
Yeah.
And it was better that they figured that out ahead of him being hired.
And they ended up with a better coach.
Real quick, when you say it wasn't all of his fault, that's the first I'm hearing this. Because all the blame went on, you know, he was the left them at the altar. What are you hearing?
So what I'd heard was that basically this didn't have anything to do with roster control. Josh knew if he was going to go to Indianapolis, like, Chris Ballard was his GM. Chris Ballard had power over that. I don't think Josh cares that much about roster control. I don't think he wants to be Bill. Like, I think he wants a say. I think he, like, wants to have a kind of defined vision for what he wants in players in every position. He wants all of that.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think he wants to, like, I don't think he cares that much about being the guy who actually pulls the trigger as long as he has somebody he can trust in that role.
Mm-hmm.
This, to me, was more about strength staff, video staff, like medical staff, how the reporting structure, it's all this stuff that no one in the public pays attention to, but it's a lot of stuff that can cause fraying between coaching and scouting.
Then why agree in the first place?
Because these things happen in such a shotgun manner.
Yeah.
That sometimes it takes a little while to figure that out.
I think
the whole the fact that they had to wait the length of time they had to wait, I think that probably allowed them some time to see, like, this doesn't really work out. And then the Kraft saw the opening.
Yeah.
And I'm just telling, like, that was a Robert Kraft operation. Credit to him for seeing the opening and going and getting him. But, like, I do think that there's an element there. I think everybody is looking at the wrong thing when it comes to what happened with Josh in Indianapolis. So, to me, it was more about the structure of the place than it was about who's actually got power.
Right. And then Frank Wright came in and said, hey, I'm better. All right. here are the headlines.
You're listening to Toucher and Rich, 98.5 The Sports Hub. yeah.
Cause we're still here now.
Oh yeah, baby.
Cause we're still here now.
Ooh.
Yeah, we're still here now.
I should be on this song. I could give background. All right.
By the way, 8 o'clock, 20 minutes from now.
I was going to do that. I was going to say that. I'm on the same page, baby.
All right.
Brookline 911. We continue to run through the best of them. And Bert Breer from MMQB in studio, he obviously has a national take.
And I'm the number one fan of Brookline 911, too.
That is a bit that is taken off.
We got a good one today. I forgot about the 8 o'clock. Yeah, 8 o'clock. I forgot about the dude who was upset that people were laughing at him at Trader Joe's, and he called twice. That one yesterday might be the front runner, in my opinion. It's not up to us.
That is not a top five to me.
Oh, really? So, your favorite, the woman who called it on the stupid kid kicking dirt at the baseball?
No, that one.
The stupid kid one was really good because it's just how stunning it was. Like, he's very stupid.
He's stupid. The guy's like, excuse me? Stupid kid kicking dirt. He was 9.
My favorite might be the rabbit guy, but you know my favorite one because I've asked you about it every day.
Yeah.
She's like, whoopsie daisies. All right.
You know what's an underrated one? It's like the one at the park where the person's taking pictures and like they call the cops on them for invasion of privacy.
Oh, sure. Well, there's one today that is just so absurd, but it's double level. It's absurd, the call itself. But then the guy who's calling, it's one of my favorite sound bites from Brookline 911.
Yeah, I have an idea of what that one is. All right, Bert, Tom Brady, obviously a big discussion for a 10-2 team. I mean, this is what we do every year, but Tom, like we said earlier in the show, the difference is that Tom Brady has never acted like this, at least to my knowledge. From a national perspective, what is the view of Tom Brady, and how are people feeling? Do they think that it's warranted? What's the deal?
Well, I don't think that the teams I've talked to that have coached against him don't think he's quite the same player, mm-hmm. but he hasn't fallen off a cliff. So, like, I don't think the arm strength is an issue. I think what you're seeing is his clock sped up a little bit, and it's a little hard to separate how much of it's him and how much of it is, you know, he's got like the remains of Marshall Newhouse blocking for him and like whatever they're throwing out there at receiver. And, you know, like he's obviously been very vocal about that. Now you're asking the national view on the way he's sort of like,
how he's acting, how he's performing. Yeah. All of that stuff.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, I think like that part of it is, I think most people look at it as sort of understandable, you know, and I don't think everybody on the national level is, you know, taking the microscope to it the way that we are here. But, I think most people look at it and say, well, they didn't do enough to help him. Like, what do you want him to do?
Okay.
So what are you thinking about all of these? I mean, obviously the Antonio Brown thing's not going to happen. We all agree that, right?
Yeah.
I mean, okay. The Dez Bryant thing I thought was funny yesterday, him tweeting that, you know, he's got a big announcement over the next couple of weeks. And Fred and I, you know, I don't know why Dez Bryant is even being spoken about right now.
Yeah.
He's coming off of an injury. He hasn't played in forever.
He's old. He wasn't good when his career.
He wasn't very good. That's what a lot of people are missing is that he still wasn't very good.
Yep.
At the end in Dallas, which is why they let him go. He probably only lasted as long as he did because Jerry had affection for him mm-hmm. personally. And, you know, he goes to New Orleans, blows his Achilles. There's not great history of guys coming back from Achilles injuries at that age, especially at skill positions where speed and explosion and everything else is really important.
Okay, so yesterday or the day before, we played the clip of the one and only Deion Sanders. And the guy just talks the talk, we know that. And I know you have some firsthand knowledge of his work ethic. But he threw something out there that was just something's going to happen with the Patriots over the next couple of weeks. Just you watch. They're going to make this big move.
He said they were going to make a trade and had to be reminded that the trade deadline had passed.
Yeah, which kind of like hurt the credibility of the statement, right?
Sure.
Well, there was really no statement.
No, he said.
Yeah, I know.
He said, I guarantee the Patriots are going to make a big move when it comes to receiver over the next couple of weeks.
My favorite, my like Was this before or after he tried to get himself in the Florida State coaching search?
That was after, which is great. Like, yeah. That's great, too. I mean.
The biggest butts. Yeah, so I think, like, my perception of that was that, you know, he's got a close relationship with Dez Bryant, and he was probably trying to drum up interest in Bryant.
Oh, so you think it's a Dez Bryant thing?
I think Bryant's been, to some degree, frustrated with the lack of interest. And, I mean, look, like, you sort of make your own bet on this. If you're a pain in the ass, like, and you can't play anymore, you're a little less of what you were before. Like, Jerry Rice, like, survived forever in the NFL, mostly because he was a good guy, worked his ass off, was a good teammate. And so, you know what? Like, a guy like that, when he's not your number one receiver anymore, transition to becoming a number two or a number three.
It's a great mentor, too.
So you bring that guy in. When a guy like T.O. or Dez can't play anymore, or is a little less than what he was before,
sure,
it becomes that much harder because, like, all right, so I'm going to take on all of that for what? For 50 catches? Yeah. No, I'm not doing that.
That's a good point.
50 catches is very optimistic.
Right. So I think there's some frustration on Dez's part here, which is being expressed via Deion Sanders. Which is, like, the most Cowboys thing of all time, probably, right? That you have that happening. I think it's honestly, like, my when I saw what Deion said, I 100% thought this is Deion doing Dez's work. Scooping up the winner
with the biggest butts. Thank you very much, Deion. So I guess the question now is, does Brady have enough with what he has to be able to make any kind of, I mean, so far we haven't seen it all click yet.
Yeah.
But it seems like he's done well with bad ingredients before. And I don't even call this bad ingredients.
Right.
Can he make this work?
Well, but is he at the phase of his career that, like, John Elway was in, you know, 1996, 1997, 1998? And you guys remember, like, when Elway was in his 20s in 86, 87, 89, they went to the Super Bowl. Like, how many players can you guys name off of those teams?
Was that that wasn't the Smurfs, was it?
I think Three Amigos.
Three Amigos.
Three Amigos.
Yeah, but then when he was older, obviously it was Terrell Davis's team.
But that's the thing. It's in the 80s, he was capable of carrying players who weren't that great, like, all the way to the Super Bowl. Now, they got croaked when they got there, but, like, he was able to, like, kind of lift the level of the players around him up.
Yeah.
He wasn't capable of that in, like, 96, 97, 98. But he had Mike Shanahan as his coach. He had the best offensive line in football in front of him. He had Shannon Sharp. He had Ed McCaffrey. He had Rod Smith. He had Terrell Davis.
Can they be the Broncos from a couple years ago when Peyton Manning was on it? Can they be that?
And that's a good question, because that Broncos team was incredible on defense.
Yep, like this Patriots team.
And this Patriots team has the capability of being incredible on defense. So I think you have to sort of, if you're going to be in that spot, like, that Denver offense, for all of its flaws, and had a lot of them, was complementary to the Broncos defense. Run game.
MVP kind of running back.
Shorten the game. Well, no, I'm not even talking about the Terrell Davis.
No, we're talking about the one that won just a couple years ago.
My bad.
Papa John Super Bowl. Come on.
Talk about, like, the C.J. Anderson Broncos.
My bad.
Like, they were able to just manage the game around the running game and shorten the game. And, you know, you don't make mistakes.
Yep.
You don't give up field position. And you just play into the defense's strengths. And I think, like, we saw last year, like, in January, we saw the makings of that, right, with Sony Michel. Now, the question is going to be, is the offensive line good enough to be that again? And Isaiah Wynn wasn't great against wasn't great last week against the Texans.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see how he is against the Chiefs. Marcus Cannon, look, I think he's hurt, right? And he's dealing with a bunch of different stuff, but
it's like an illness, right?
Right, and he had the illness, and, like, so he, like, I don't know if you guys saw this or not, but, like, he got benched for a series against the Texans. They brought Newhouse back in. And Shaq Mason hasn't been what he was. And so I think the bigger question, while we're all focusing on who Brady's throwing to, the bigger question is, can they get their offensive line in order? If they can get their offensive line in order, now all of a sudden you can build, okay, like, we're going to build around the running game now. And now we're going to build around Sony Michel and James White and Rex Burkhead, and Tom Brady and the passing game are going to be complementary to that, and we can play into the strengths of our defense. So I think that that's the formula. And to me, that's more about fixing what's happening on the offensive line than it's about fixing what's happening at the skill position players. That, to me, is the way you do it. And we're going to find out. I think we're going to see something with the defense this week, because One thing that sort of tied the Ravens and Texans losses together for me, both those offenses had a lot of speed, right? Like, so the Ravens have Hollywood Brown. They've got Lamar at quarterback. Mm-hmm. The Texans have Will Fuller. They've got Kenny Stills. The Chiefs have more speed than anybody. And the Chiefs are finally healthy for the first time all year.
Yeah.
And so, like, how they deal with the Chiefs' speed, if they can shut the Chiefs down, then it's like, okay, you've got a defense. You can win a Super Bowl with, and you don't need to be that good on offense.
Yeah.
So I think the Chiefs game is actually going to be really instructive from that standpoint.
All right. We will take a quick break, finish up with Bert, and then is Brookline 911.
Stay tuned for more Toucher and Rich on 98.5 Sports Hub.
Ace.
My intuition is telling me there'll be better days.
98.5 Sports Hub. We're Toucher and Rich. Yeah. All right, Bert Breer, in the next 2.5 minutes, what is your prediction for the game, Kansas City and the Patriots?
I have a hard time picking against them at home. That said, I think this Chiefs team has we haven't seen, the full scope of who they can be, because they had so many new pieces on defense coming into the season. New mm-hmm. coordinator in Spagnuolo, Tyrann Mathieu, Frank Clark, obviously Justin Houston, Dee Ford, and Eric Berry are all gone. And so, the defense has started to play better. And the offense, the first time the offensive line had played together as a unit since September was in that game in Mexico City.
Mm-hmm.
The first time they'd had their whole group together, really outside of Damian Williams, was last week against the Raiders.
Okay.
What happened?
Yeah, I mean, it was
brutal. I'm very tempted to pick the Chiefs here because I think the Chiefs should be able to move the ball. They're not going to score 40 again, but score 21, 24, 27 points against the Patriots. And if they can do that, can the Patriots keep up? I still think the Patriots are going to win, but I think it's going to be really close. I think the game's going to be in the 20s.
The Patriots need the bye week. Do they need it to end up getting to the Super Bowl?
Yeah, I think I've made this point before. I don't think that having home field is as much about you as it is about the other team. And you've got a bunch of teams that, are going to be in the mix that I think would really benefit from playing at home. Houston is definitely one
mm-hmm.
if you had to play them. The Chiefs are one. The Ravens are one. So I don't think it's as much about you. I don't think the Patriots are going to get freaked out if they got to go to Baltimore or Houston or Kansas City, right?
Yeah.
But I do think that the other team could get freaked out if they come here.
Yeah, sure. Well, the Texans are the prime example.
So it's to your benefit. So it's to your benefit to have the game played, to have games played here. And if you don't get the bye, that means you're probably going to have to go on the road twice
mm-hmm.
to make it to the Super Bowl. So I think they do need the bye. If they lose this game, that is very much in question all of a sudden, because now you've lost the tiebreaker to all three of the other division leaders, right? Because Houston, Kansas City, and Baltimore all at that point would have the tiebreaker on you.
Yeah, didn't think about that. Yep.
Right. And so now you're still in front of them because you have three losses. You'd still be a game up on Houston, assuming they win. You'd still be a game up on Kansas City. But at that point, your margin for error is gone. You lose one more game, and you could be playing wild card weekend.
Sure. And you've got the Bills still on your schedule, which is going to be interesting.
Right. And for all they've accomplished here, they've never made it to a Super Bowl coming out of the wild card round. They've rarely played in the wild card round recently, so I know that that's kind of a moving target and everything else. But if you look, I believe in 2005, they had to play in the wild card round, lost in the divisional round. In 2006, they had to play in the wild card round, lost in the divisional round. No, they lost in the championship game. So, and then in 2009, they lost in the wild card round. So when they've been in the wild card round, they've lost. And they haven't fared as well.
All right, Antonio Brown, finally, do you have anything to say? Not Bert, but Antonio Brown himself.
Oh.
About what's going on in terms of your relationship with Tom Brady.
Are you looking for, hang on, I don't know. I've got it.
I just got to ask him. I mean, I wouldn't know.
We got something?
I don't know. Would this be what he was going to say?
I didn't fart it.
That's AD fart, not AB fart. That would be AD.
It's like putting you under the gun.
Well, I know. This new system, it's a little tough for me right now.
Okay.
I'm still looking for it.
All right.
I know you love those Antonio Brown farts as much as I do.
just trying to help. All right. It's Bert Breer from MMQB. Thank you so much.
Oh, by the way, now Diaz saw that AB did tweet right this morning.
Yeah, call God.
Call God.
Yeah, yeah. Which I'm okay. I'll do that.
Yeah.
Get right on it.
Get on the old rotary.
You guys should be replying with the call-in number here.
Okay.
The hotline number.
That's right. We'll get a lot of publicity.
All right.
Well, it was an idea. All right.
All right, guys.
There it is. Oh, it's Brown dash fart, not AB dash fart.
Okay. All right.
And there's AB, there's Brown dash fart three, because there's three fart clips of Antonio okay. Brown.
All right. No commercials. All right. No commercials here. We come back. The best of Brookline 911.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.